Blog Talk Radio.
To you, my Yadu, I lift up my soul. And trust in you, he always kept me whole. And left my enemies deep in their holes. Let none that wait on Yahweh be ashamed. But shame on those who sin without a cause. Show me your ways, please teach me your laws. Oh Elohim of my salvation. I'm staying down impatient as a child, all the while I'm waiting. Remember not the sins of my youth. Leave me in your truth and he'll give your soul ease. The earth shall remain inherited by your seed. The secret of Yahweh who fears Elohim, a fool believes everything and to every word spoken. You can't take heed unless you hear somebody curse. You know you did the same thing. That's why I'm begging y'all for mercy and it's love and kindness, cause I know that I ain't worthy. Worthy.
Captivity is taking hold upon me. Put fright in me and now we flee from falling leaves. The grind and grief from all the blood our people seen. And now we cry, where is the word from Elohim? And so we said that we all is wise to be submissive, but we dismiss it. It is of this reason we have fallen victim to the lies that your root will appraise and pursue. Rebellious of the son, forgotten that he is one. Broken the holy ordinance, rejecting the reproof. Then acknowledge what we do. Now we return back to the truth.
God's word is the truth. God's decrees is the proof. Local 12 just released the scoop. It's the summer of Sam. They calling us Ham. Made us worship the son of man. And somehow that the moon, they stole our style and gave it to Rothschild. Now we exalt the vow, but hit the turnstile. God's now be set the crooked things straight. Praise God from the rising to the evening to the closing the gate. Exposing the fake. God give the truth a day break. Now the liars can't escape and the haters can't relate to the light the truth makes. See the wicked's pride deflate. Your soul, y'all magnify, y'all cut his grace.
Sure, his word would be magnified. And that is what Moray Ishaya masterfully presented to everyone the first two books of the Seat in detail last night. And the day before, he masterfully went over all of them in general to let you understand what we will be doing in the following days. We dealt with the first two books of the Seat, which also happened to be from the two largest religions on the face of the earth. And that is the New Testament and the Quran. And why would we bring to you the New Testament, even though there's a lot of books? Why those books? Because these two religions, especially the religion that comes from the New Testament, has deceived the whole world. Even in the New Testament, it tells you the devil has deceived the whole world. And then we brought the Quran to let you know that Islam is not what they have lied to you and told you that it is. They have lied to you and told you that the Quran is the Torah in the Arabic language. And they've also said that Islam is the religion of peace. And it was very easily shown yesterday that Islam is definitely not the Torah in the Arabic language, nor is it the religion of peace. If it was the religion of peace, why did it say in Surah 34, Ayat, Surah 4, Ayat 34, that beat your wife? If the Quran was the religion of peace, why does it teach you to fight your brother if they don't serve the deity? Because it's not what it tells you it is. As it was pointed out yesterday, things of the New Testament has brought to you the new covenant, in which we saw what Yahweh said, that no man shall teach his brother anymore, know Yahweh, for they shall all know me, from the least of them even to the greatest. Knocking on your doors every morning, people standing in the street and telling you that the Holy Ghost is near. So we see that the New Testament has not told you the truth. They would have tell you that the New Testament is a book. The law has been fulfilled. But in the book of Matthew, the 5th chapter, the 17th verse, the Christ of the New Testament said that he has not come to destroy the law or the prophets. He said that not one thing shall be moved from the law, not one jot or one tittle, until all have been fulfilled. It also says in the New Testament, in the book of Matthew, the 19th chapter, the 16th verse, that if you want everlasting life, do the commandments. Because the New Testament is not only a book of lies, it's a book of contradictions. And you'll never find a contradiction in the word of Yah. The Quran also is a book of lies and contradictions. But what books are we going to deal with today? We're going to deal with the Talmud. Now, why are we going to go to the Talmud? Even though the mass majority of Judaic and Judaism, and those that follow Judaism, even including our brothers and sisters that know that they're the children of Israel, unfortunately have been tricked and lied to by the doctrine of Judaism. And the Talmud is the chief doctrine of Judaism. And therefore, we must go and show you how the Talmud has deceived you. Excuse me, we have technical difficulties.
Now we're back, and I want to know if you're on YouTube, can you please comment if you can hear me consistently? What I was saying, for those that didn't hear, because I got messages that there was not good volume, that you couldn't hear us, what I was saying was we went into the New Testament and the Quran yesterday, and we learned that these books are not the books, you can hear me? The books of the truth, they are the books of deceit. The New Testament teaches you that you don't have to keep the law, where Yahweh tells you that his law is forever. The New Testament teaches you that circumcision is done away with in the book of Galatians, the fifth chapter, the second through the fifth verse. But Yahweh tells you that circumcision is forever. The New Testament tells you you can eat anything you want, but the book of Yahweh tells you that you cannot eat any unclean thing. In no abominable thing, the Most High's word teaches you that you can serve Yahweh and Yahweh only, but the New Testament tells you that you can serve angels, JC, and don't let anybody tell you anything about serving whatever you want. The Quran tells you that it's the law in Arabic, but you don't see the Quran supporting the laws of Yahweh. The Quran tells you you can eat rats, cats, dogs, buzzards, snakes, rabbits, and all kind of other different abominable animals. And then it also tells you that this dietary law is good for you. That's in Surah 6, verses 1 through 8. So the New Testament and the Quran are not the books of truth. They are the books of deceit. And that is what I was essentially saying while we were having our volume difficulties. Excuse us for that. And then I just finished saying that we're going to go into the Talmud today, this night. We're going to go into the Talmud. And the reason that we're going into the Talmud is because the Talmud is the chief doctrine of Judaism. And why would we go and show you the deceit of Judaism? Because many of our brothers and sisters have been tricked by the religion of Judaism. And Judaism's chief doctrine is the Talmud. Even though they say they keep Torah, even though they say they follow Moses and the prophets, even though they say they follow the Tanakh, but when did Yahweh call his book the Tanakh? When did Yahweh call his book the law, the writings, and the prophets? But they say they got the Talmud, and the Talmud is a very extensive manuscript of writings. So for me to go into the Talmud this night would be actually impossible for me to cover that book in its entirety because of how extensive it is. The Talmud has various volumes, over about 30 of them. And there are two different types of Talmuds at that. You have the Babylonian Talmud, which is the first one, the original one. And then you have the Jerusalem Talmud, which there's not much variation between the two. But rather than going chapter by chapter in the Talmud, and rather than going verse by verse in the Talmud, I'm going to give you a history of the Talmud, and then I'm going to show you a couple of things in the Talmud. And then we'll get to the fourth book of the deceit, which is the book of Enoch. But before I go into the Talmud, let me reiterate the scripture that I read which is showing you why we're even dealing with the seven books of the sea. And in the book of Jeremiah, the first chapter, the 10th verse, and let's start reading at the 9th verse where it says, "Then Yahweh put forth his hand and touched my mouth, and Yahweh said unto me, Behold, I have put my words in thy mouth." You see, Yahweh put his words in Jeremiah's mouth. And he said, "See, I have this day set thee over the nations and over the kingdoms to root out and to pull down and to destroy and to throw down." And that's what is a task of Yahweh's servant when he has to teach the truth. He has to root out. He has to pull down. He has to destroy, and he has to throw down the deceit, because there are multiple false teachings in your midst. There were in the days of Jeremiah, and there are in the days of us today, false teachings running rampant. That's why it says in the book of Isaiah, "Behold, the earth is in darkness, and the people gross darkness." Why would he send his servant to root out, to pull down, to tear down, and to throw down? Well, because he said that our people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. But what kind of knowledge do you have? Well, we've been following, as it says in Isaiah, the 29th chapter, the 13th verse, it says, "And they come near me with their mouth, and they draw near to me with their lips, and with their lips they do honor me. But their hearts are very far from me, because the fear towards Yahweh has been taught to you by the precepts of man." It also lets you know in the book of Isaiah, the 9th chapter, the 16th verse, that for the leaders of this people have caused them to err, and those that are led of them are destroyed of them. It also lets you know in the book of Jeremiah, the 2nd chapter, around the 13th verse, it says that these two evils have been committed. "For my people have forgotten me, the fountain of living waters, and hewn out cisterns, broken cisterns, that hold no water." The word of the Most High also has let you know in the book of Isaiah, the 30th chapter, around the 2nd verse, I believe, it lets you know, or around the 8th verse, it says that these people have said, "Get you out of the way and do not stand in the way, and speak not unto us right things, but speak unto us smooth things." People didn't want to hear the word of Yah. Therefore, Yahweh said to Jeremiah, "I have sent unto you to root out, to pull down, and to destroy, and to throw down, to build, and to plant." So we're going to have to tear down some things so we can build up the right things. How else do you think you can make the crooked things straight? Well, if it's crooked, the only way you can straighten it out is to bang out the dents. When you send your car to the body shop and the car has the dent, is crooked now, now they got to bang that thing out. And we're going to have to bang it out. And we're going to show you the Talmud today. And if you, well, you might not have the Talmud. And I know many people don't have the Talmud, because the Talmud is not an inexpensive book. But you can write these things down. First off, look what the Most High says in the book of Psalms, the 83rd chapter. And just as last week, we learned, through learning about Yahweh's seven virtuous women of the scriptures, we learned about how Jacob and Esau became to be. And we saw that Esau despised his birthright and that it wasn't his from the beginning anyway. His mother, Rebekah, already knew that the birthright was going to Yaakov. But custom had them thinking that it was going to Esau. But he despised it. And then when it was taken from him, he hated Yaakov and wanted to kill him. And Esau has held that grudge for thousands of years. And as we read last week, during the Sabbath day, in the book of Obadiah, that Esau stood in the way when Jacob was being led into captivity. And he was right along with the heathens and the enemies, saying, raise it even to the foundation thereof. That they put their hands on Yaakov's inheritance. We found out that Esau has had a great hatred for the children of Israel. So much so, they have decided to impersonate their brother in order to make you and I believe that we are not the children of the Most High. And in the book of Psalms, the 83rd division, you'll see that it says in the second verse, "For lo, thy enemies make a tumult, and they that hate thee have lifted up the head. They have taken crafty counsel against thy people, and have consulted against thy hidden one. They have said, come, let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may no more be in remembrance." Who said that? Who said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation? Who wanted to do this? It says in verse 5, "For they have consulted together with one consent. They are confederate against thee, the tabernacles of Edom." Number one public enemy, number one in the book of Yah, the tabernacles of Edom and the Ishmaelites of Moab. And who are the Ishmaelites and the Hagarenes? Well, that's Ishmael. That's the Arabic, as you know, of the Arabic people. Islam and Esau are confederate in one consent. And they have hoping the children of Lot. And if you didn't know, it is Esau that owns all the publishing houses, that owns all the media centers, that owns all the big computer companies and media companies and banks. The heathens might have made a New Testament, but it was Esau that approved it for publishing. The Ishmaelites might have wrote a Quran, but it was Esau that approved it for publishing in huge, wide dissemination throughout the world. If you didn't know, it was Esau that was giving them, the Christians and the Muslims, these books that they have gone astray with. And what were they using? They were using the Talmud. And what is the Talmud? Do you even ever see the Talmud in the scriptures? Well, no, of course not. Because Yahweh never mentioned anything about the Talmud. What do they say the Talmud is? They say the Talmud is the oral law. Now, why would you have to have a book and call it the oral law? Why do you need the oral law? Well, they call it the Mishnah. If you ever looked at a Talmud, you might see that it says Mishnah. And why does it say Mishnah? Mishnah is supposed to be the repetitive teachings or the oral teachings spoken repeatedly. And why do they need the Mishnah? And then you'll see something called the Gemara or the Gomorrah. Why do you need this? Which is supposed to be the commentary of the Mishnahs, really the conversations between various rabbinical scholars about the Mishnah, about the oral law. And eventually they said sometime around 500 B.C., which means or B.C.E. before the Common Era, or B.C. before Christ, that they put together the Talmud in Babylon. Israelites are supposed to have done this. Now, why would they have to have the Mishnah, the oral law? Because this is what they say the Talmud is, the oral law. And what do they say the oral law is? And what I'm telling you, you can look up in the Jewish Encyclopedia. What I'm telling you, you can look up in the Talmud when they tell you the history of the Talmud and why they have it. There's a section in the Talmud called the History of the Talmud. And you can look this up. Or you go to the Jewish Encyclopedia and look it up. Look under Talmud. Look under oral law or Mishnah. And you'll find what I'm saying to you to be the truth. Or you could just go to the internet and Google it and find it on Wikipedia. However you want to do your research. But the Talmud or the Mishnah, oral law, where do they say they got this oral law from? Well, they say that the oral law was communicated to Moses on the mountain from Yahweh himself. And that's interesting, because let me show you what Yahweh said. Yahweh said this in the book of Exodus. I believe I want the 34th or 33rd chapter. Let me verify that. In Exodus, Exodus chapter 34. And it says here in Exodus 34 in the first verse, and Yahweh said unto Moses, hew thee two tables of stone, like unto the first, and I will write upon these tables the words that were in the first tables which thou breakest. So you see what Yahweh gave Moses. He said that I will write upon the tables the words that were in the first tables. So he didn't say nothing about Talmud at all. Again, what did Yahweh tell Moshe? Yahweh told Moshe this, again in the book of Exodus. In the 20th or in the 19th chapter. In the book of Exodus, chapter 19. Let's see. Start reading here. In the book of Exodus 19. Start reading at the third verse. It says, and Moses went up unto Elohim, and Yahweh called unto him out of the mountain, saying, thus shall thou say unto the house of Yaakov, and tell the children of Israel, ye have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings, and brought you up unto myself. Now therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed, and keep my covenant, then ye shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. And Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before their faces all these words which Yahweh commanded him. And all the people answered together and said, all that Yahweh has said, we will do. And Moses returned the words of the people unto Yah. And Yahweh commanded, said to Moses, lo, I come to thee in a thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with thee, and behave thee and believe thee forever. And Moses told the words of the people. And Moses told the words of the people unto Yahweh. So you see that Yahweh told Moses that he's going to speak to the people before, and they're going to believe you, Moses, because I'm going to speak to you before they face. And he's going to believe you, and they're going to believe you. So when did he say anything about the Talmud? I don't remember seeing anything about the Talmud in the scriptures. Then go to the book of Exodus, the 24th chapter, and we'll start reading right at the 12th verse. Because I'm telling you that one of the seven books of deceit, which happens to be the third book of deceit, it tells you that it's the oral law that was given to Moses on the mountain. The law that he spoke to him. And what we've seen so far is what Yahweh said he gave Moses on the mountain. And again, in Exodus, the 24th chapter, the 12th verse, it says, and Yahweh said unto Moses, come up unto me into the mount and be there and listen to what Yahweh says. And I will give thee tables of stone and a law and commandments which I have written, that thou mayest teach them. Now, where does it say Talmud? Because Yahweh said he gave Moses tables of stone, in addition, a law, in addition, commandments, which Yahweh himself wrote. Did you see what that said? It said in verse 12 again, and Yahweh said unto Moses. That's what it says. And nowhere there did I see Talmud. And let's prove that this is not what Yahweh gave Moses on the mountain. I'm going to read from the Talmud. I'm reading, you can write this down. As I told you, there are many books to the Talmud. And they either call them volumes or tracts. T-R-A-C-T. Tracts. And I'm reading from the Sabbath Tract, Volume 1, the first Sabbath Tract, the Babylonian Talmud, the one that they say Israelites put together, out of the Mishnah, out of the first chapter. And it reads, regulations concerning prohibited and permitted acts of transfer over the dividing line of adjoining premises and the area of such premises, the classification of premises. You see how technical they got to sound, which to me don't make no sense. So let me read to you, and then I'm gonna skip all that technical stuff, and I'm going to tell you what they're saying. This is the laws about how you can exchange goods or not exchange goods on the Sabbath day. Now, what does the law say about exchanging goods on the Sabbath day? I'm going to show you that. And incidentally, let me also give you this history note about the Talmud. They claim our good brothers, our great ancestors, Ezra, the scribe, and as it says in the book of Ezra, the 7th chapter, Ezra was a ready scribe before Yahweh. And what does that mean? It means he was a diligent scribe, a diligent, hardworking scribe of the law before Yah, meaning he was a brother that wrote the words of Yah. He preserved Yah's words in Babylon. That's who Ezra was, a ready or diligent scribe of the law. You can find that in the book of Ezra, the 7th chapter. Also, they claim that Nehemiah sat on this council, which they call the Sanhedrin. They say 120 elders came out of Babylon, including Nehemiah and Ezra. And they sat on this board called the Sanhedrin, and they put together the Mishnah. Well, let's see what they have our brother saying. In the Mishnah, in the first volume of the Sabbath tract, in chapter 1, it says, there are two acts constituting transfer. One of movable things over the dividing of adjoining premises based on biblical statutes. The two acts are, listen to what they're saying, the two acts are, however, increased to four on the inside and to a like amount on the outside of the premises. So first they tell you there's two different ways you can transfer, but they will be increased depending on if it's inside or outside. It says, how so? A merchant stands outside and the master of a house inside. If the merchant passes his hand into the house through a window or a door and puts something into the hand of the master, this is all supposed to be on the Sabbath, or he takes something out of the master's hand and draws it back toward him, in such a case, the merchant is guilty and the master of the house is free. What are they telling you? They're telling you, if somebody is a merchant, a person that sells things, comes past somebody's house and he puts his hand past the borderline of this person's house, and put something in this person's hand, then the person that's selling the goods, they're guilty. But the person that received the goods, they're innocent. How is that? How did the merchant even get the permission to put his hands in your house? What is he putting his goods into if your hands wasn't stretched out? How is that okay? But this is what the Talmud says. But it gets worse. It states, if the master of the house passes his hand outside and puts a thing into the hand of the merchant, or takes something out of the merchant's hand and brings it into the house, the master of the house is culpable and the merchant is free. I know this is hard to wrap your head around because it's ridiculous. Essentially, they're saying on the Sabbath day, if you in your house stick your hand outside your house and transfer goods and services to the merchant who's outside your house, how he know to be outside your house? And you, the person of the house, put something in the merchant who's outside your house, you put something in his hand, he's not guilty. He just made money on the Sabbath, but he's not guilty. But you, the person that bought the thing from outside your house, you guilty. This is the Babylonian Talmud. Now, they said, now let me show you. And there is over 30 volumes of this kind of stuff. So you see why I'm not about to tell you about this whole book tonight. But let me show you what it says in Yahweh's book. just to show you, because they say that the Mishnah is the oral law that Moses was received on the mountain from Yahweh himself. And I just showed you in Exodus the 24th chapter, the 12th verse, in Exodus the 34th chapter, the first and second verse, and in Exodus the 19th chapter, around verses 3 through 10, what Yahweh himself said to Moses himself and what he gave him. Nowhere in there did we see that Yahweh gave Moses this Mishnah or Talmud. And Yahweh spoke it mouth to mouth, face to face. Even apparently, and not in dark speeches, because the similitude of Yahweh Moses was able to behold. Yet they say that the Talmud is the oral law from Yahweh to Moses, orally, and it's been passed down in an unbroken chain, orally, until they decided to write it around 500 BC in Babylon. Now, if anybody has ever played the game of telephone with a group of grown-ups or adults, they know there ain't no such thing as an unbroken chain of oral instructions. You know that. Just play telephone with grown-ups or children. And you already know. If I said blue, by the time it get to you, I said black ain't beautiful and all you people are ugly. And all I said was blue. We already know what happens through oral communication. That's why Yahweh said put it in a book. And if it was such an unbroken chain, why did they put it in a book? Now in the book of Ezra, the 7th chapter, because they tell you in the history of what the Talmud is, that Ezra was one of the people that communicated this oral law. He was of the Sanhedrin court, 120 of our Israelite brothers and ancestors that supposedly communicated this oral law to rabbis. And that's the other thing the Talmud does. It has a bunch of quotes and discussions and writings from rabbis. And Yahweh never mentioned a rabbi in the scriptures. And in the book of Ezra, the 7th chapter, I'm going to start reading verse 6. Now I'm going to start at the first verse. It says, "Now after these things, in the reign of Artaxerxes, king of Persia, Ezra, the son of Sariah, the son of Azariah, the son of Hilkiah, the son of Shalom, the son of Zadok, the son of Ahitub, the son of Amariah, the son of Azariah, the son of Meriot, the son of Zarahiah, the son of Uzi, the son of Buki, the son of Abishua, the son of Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, and the son of Aharon, the chief priest." See, this is Ezra's lineage. He was of the sons of Aaron. He was a high priest. He also was a descendant of, a cousin or descendant of Jeremiah, because it says the son of Hilkiah, and Jeremiah was the son of Hilkiah. And it says here in verse 6, "This Ezra went up from Babylon, and he was a ready scribe in the law of Moses," not the Talmud, but the law of Moses, "which Yahweh Elohim of Israel had given the house of your the house which Israel had given, and the king granted him in all his requests according to the hand of Yahweh his Elohim was upon him." Where does it say that he had the Talmud? If Ezra was a ready scribe of Yahweh's law, why did he need to have any mention that he did anything with any Sanhedrin court about any Talmud or oral law or Mishnah or Gemara? Why? Because that's a lie. Because not only is the Talmud a book of deceit, its history is a book of deceit. And since it says that you can transfer goods like this on the Sabbath day, what did another person that they claim was on the Sanhedrin court, that they claim had some involvement in transferring this oral law, what did they claim? What did this brother, Nehemiah, what did he do? How would he have looked at this Sabbath law in the Talmud that they try to give him some credit to having something to do with? In the book of Nehemiah, the 13th chapter, I'll start reading in the 15th verse. It says, "In those days saw I and Yehuda some treading wine presses on the Sabbath, and bringing sheaves, and lading asses, and also wine, grapes, and figs, and all manner of burdens, which they brought into Jerusalem," or Jerusalem, "on the Sabbath day. And I testified against them in the day wherein they sold victuals, merchants, in Jerusalem, on the Sabbath day." And Nehemiah testified against them because they were selling victuals. Now, as the Talmud said, if the man is outside your house and you do this kind of hand game with them, you be okay, he be okay. And if I read further, I would have showed you how they say if you just put it in a certain place in the house, you put it there and he pick it up, then nobody's guilty. But Nehemiah said that this is a, he testified against merchants doing these things on the Sabbath day in Jerusalem. Verse 16, it said, "There dwelt men of Tyre also, therein which brought fish and all manner of ware, and sold on the Sabbath unto the children of Yehuda and in Jerusalem. Then I contended with the nobles of Yehuda and said," why isn't this in the Talmud? When Nehemiah contended with the nobles of Yehuda and said unto them, "What evil thing is this that ye do and profane the Sabbath day? Did not your fathers thus? And did not our Elohim bring all this evil upon us and upon this city? Yet ye bring more wrath upon Israel by profaning the Sabbath day." I don't read that in Talmud. You don't read that in Talmud at all. In verse 19, "And it came to pass that when the gates of Jerusalem began to be dark before the Sabbath, I commanded that the gates should be shut and charged that they should not be opened till after the Sabbath. And some of my servants set eye at the gates that there should no burden be brought in on the Sabbath day. So the merchants and the sellers of all kind of ware were lodged without Jerusalem once or twice." Now they ain't even in the gates. So how are you going to even allow them to exchange anything in and out your house? But he said, now they outside the gates, Nehemiah said. So he says in verse 21, "Then I testified against them and said unto them, why lodge ye about the wall? If you do so again, I will lay hands on you." From that time forth came they no more on the Sabbath. So even though they put Nehemiah and Ezra on the Sanhedrin court, which was supposedly translating and communicating the Talmud and the oral law and the Mishnah, the first writers of it, you find that they don't agree with the first teaching of the Talmud, which is that you could break the Sabbath day. And if you got a teacher telling you you could break the Sabbath day, it can't be what Yahweh told Moses. Let me show you one more thing out of the scriptures. I'm going to show you one more thing out of the scriptures. Then I'm going to show you one more thing out of the Talmud. And then we're going to move to the next book. Look what Yahweh said about the Sabbath day in Isaiah, the 58th chapter. It says in Isaiah 58, verse 13, this is the words of Yahweh. Now, Yahweh told Moses on the mountain, in the law, that he will raise up a prophet like unto him, and he shall put his words in his mouth, and that prophet will speak the words that Yahweh gave them in Yahweh's name. But all throughout the Talmud, and you can just look it up all throughout the Talmud, all you have is the names of various different rabbis. Rabbi Yoel, Rabbi Aaron, Rabbi Moses, Rabbi so-and-so, Rabbi Hillel, which is one of the most famous of them all because he's the one that came up with the Jewish calendar. And where do you think they got the Jewish calendar from? The Talmud. It's in the Talmud that lays the foundation and the groundwork for the teachings of when a day begins and ends. It is in the Talmud under the teachings of feast days and the 4 years of the different years. They have the new years of trees, the new years of agriculture, the spiritual year, and the civil year. You find that in the volume dealing with the feast days. It is in the Talmud that they say a day is from evening to evening. It is in the Talmud that they tell you Moses added a day when he told the people to keep, be ready against the third day, that Yahweh told him 2 days, but Moses added a third day because he was told it to in the evening, so he had to add another day to fill in for that night. That's in the Talmud. I believe in the ninth chapter. And this is what they, this is where the foundation for a day beginning at night comes from. The Talmud. It is in the Talmud that tell you they got different years. A year for a new year's for trees, a new year's for agriculture, a new year's for the, for spiritual purposes, and a new year for the civil year. And it's the civil year that they call their new year. They call Rosh Hashanah. And you know when that is? Of course it is at the end of the year. And you find all that in the Talmud. But this is what Yahweh said in Isaiah 58 verse 13. If thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure. Now anybody that decides they're going to call their merchant man and say, look, you stand outside the house, you put the merchandise there, and I put them and I put the money there, and I grab the merchandise, and you grab the money. Now, nobody's breaking the Sabbath. Or, look, I'll just be guilty on this one. Just hand me the merchandise, and I'll take it. You reach into my house. I'll reach out my house, and you take the merchandise and the money, and I'll just be guilty. Or the merchant like, I don't care, man. I'll just be guilty. You be innocent. Here, I'm going to reach in your house. This ain't got nothing to do with Yahweh at all. It says, if you turn your foot from the Sabbath day, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day. What's holy about doing that? Nothing. And call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of Yah, honorable, and shall honor him. Not doing thine own ways. And surely what I read to you in the Talmud is man's own ways. Not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasures, nor speaking your own words. Then you shall delight yourself in Yah, and I will cause thee to ride upon the high places of the earth and feed thee with the heritage of Yahakov thy father. For the mouth of Yahweh has spoken it. Not the mouth of Rabbi Joel, Rabbi Hiddekel, Rabbi Hillel, or Rabbi whoever, because that's what the Talmud, all it quotes, is rabbis. But nowhere do you see Yahweh said. Nowhere do you see Yahweh said you can do any of these things. Let me show you one more thing in the Talmud. Just one more thing here in the Talmud. And this is dealing with time. Bear with me. As I read this, let's see if this starts out how Yah's book says. Yah's book says, seek ye out of the book of Yah and read. Not one of these shall fail, and not one of them shall lack her mate. So the Talmud can't be no oral law, can't be no mate, can't be nothing to Yah's book. It says in the Talmud, Samuel said, not Yahweh, and this ain't talking about the prophet Samuel either. This is talking about some rabbi, some teacher. Samuel said, I can arrange the calendar for the whole captivity. Abba, the father of Rabbi Simlai, said to him, does the master know that which a certain Borathah teaches concerning the secret of the intercalculary day? Whether the new moon appears before or after midday? Now, just hear what we're talking about now. What is an intercalculary day? Some of you might not know what an intercalculary day is. Well, if you look at the Jewish encyclopedia, and they got this knowledge from the Talmud, the Jewish encyclopedia would tell you that the Jews decided they had to fix the calendar because it wasn't according to its seasons. And Yahweh gave them the permission to fix the calendar. That's why he called it fixed times. And so they start adding days on their calendar. And they call them intercalculary days. Days that had to be added to keep with the seasons of the Gregorian calendar. And here you have the people of the Talmud discussing intercalculary days about a new moon appearing before or after midday. And how is the moon going to come in midday and mean anything? The moon doesn't rule the day. The moon rules the night. And this man said, no. Then Master said, if you don't know this, there may be other things which you don't know. Yeah, I'm sure there is. When Rabbi Zerah, and when you read the Talmud, you'll see a R period, which means rabbi, because they don't want to spell out rabbi all the time. That's how many rabbis is in the Talmud. When Rabbi Zerah went to Palestine, he sent back word to his comrades saying, the evening and the morning must both belong to the month. That is when the old moon has still been seen after dark on the 29th day of the month, the 30th evening, and the following day belong to the closing month. Now, how in the world does this make any sense? It says the evening and the morning following must both belong to the month. That is when the old moon has still been seen after dark on the 29th day of the month. Letting you know that if you see, letting you know a couple of things. One, that these Jews weren't going by a dark moon. Two, that they were looking for a moon at night. And they said the 30th evening, which I don't know, I guess is the 29th evening, or I don't know how they do that. The 30th evening and the following day. So the 30th evening and the next day would, I don't know, what date would that be? I guess that's still the 30th in their book because their days begin at night. And the following day would belong to the closing month. And this is what Abba, the father of Rabbi Simlai, meant. We calculate only the beginning of the new moon if it began before midday. How does the moon begin before midday? It is certain that it is what seemed close upon the setting of the sun. But if it did not begin before midday, it is certain that it did not appear close upon the setting of the sun. What difference does it make? Answered Rabbi Ashi, to refute a witness. In other words, they have no idea how to count their days. Yet, this is the chief doctrine. This is the chief book on and where Israelites have been taught that a day begins at night and that a month is beginning with the moon, the chief doctrine. And what did Yahweh say? Well, we already know what Yahweh said in the book of Genesis, the first chapter, the 14th verse. He said, and Elohim said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs, seasons, days, and years. And let these lights give light upon the earth. So Elohim made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. And he made the stars also. And Elohim set these lights in the firmament of heaven to divide the day from night and give light upon the earth. And as you know what Yah said, the greater light rules the day. Not in any place did Yahweh say you got to wait for the moon on this night and in this evening and in this day to figure out if the month going to start here, if the day going to begin here. But they say this is what Yahweh gave to Moses on the mountain. The Mishnah, the Talmud, is supposed to be the oral law, what Yahweh gave to Moses on the mount. And I'm here to tell you that Yahweh never spoke one mumbling word in the Talmud at all. As a matter of fact, Yahweh said, in the book of Isaiah, the 34th chapter, the 16th verse, seek ye out of the book of Yah and read. And how in the world can the Talmud be the oral law that Yahweh gave to Moses on the mountain, Mount Horeb, if Yahweh said this in the book of Isaiah, the 33rd chapter? And how in the world could this Talmud that gives credit to man throughout the entire encyclopedia of the Talmud, how in the world can this be the word of Yah when you never see Yahweh mentioned? And Yahweh said this in Isaiah 33 verse 22. For Yahweh is our judge. Yahweh is our lawgiver. That means the Sanhedrin court, the 120 of the so-called Sanhedrin court, are not the lawgivers. Yahweh is our king, and he will save us. Therefore, the Talmud has been deemed and noted as a book of deceit, the third book of deceit. Furthermore, we have one more book to deal with. But in dealing with this book, I must show you the first book of deceit to show you why many of our people even know about this book of deceit. Little do people know, they hear the many, especially many of our people that are coming into the knowledge, and they don't know about a lot of things. Because when you come into the knowledge, and I was just like you all that came into the knowledge when they first came into the knowledge. When I first came into the knowledge, I heard the words Book of Enoch. I'm like, Enoch, he's the one that Yahweh said walked with him. If there's a book of Enoch, it must be a great book. It must be a beautiful book. It must be a book that has the word of Yah in it, because I've learned that these heathens have lied to us. I learned that our enemies that took us into captivity has defiled the words of the Most High and gave us this book, and that King James was a white man and he was a homosexual, and that they done made the Council of Nicaea and they took out all these books, and there's various books all over the place. I heard this, So the book of Enoch must be a book that I need to go to and look at. I was just like you. And I went and I got me a book of Enoch. I got the lost books of the Bible and the forgotten books of Eden. I got the book of Jubilee, the book of Jasher. I got every book that I could find because I didn't know. I only had got up to like Deuteronomy by this time. I didn't know in Isaiah 34:16, it says, "Seek ye out of the book of Yah and read, not one of these shall fail, and not one shall want her mate." I didn't know that. And nor do a lot of you all that might be new that haven't heard that before. Well, that's why the Most High said, root out, pull down, tear down, throw down, plant and build. And what do you find out in the book of Enoch? First off, you'll find out that Yahweh never told you, is this not written in the book of Enoch? If somebody came to me and said, "Hey, I have the book of the prophet Nathan," I might raise my eyebrow. I might consider. Why? Why might I raise my eyebrow? Why might I consider? Well, I might raise my eyebrow. I might consider that because in the book of 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 1 Chronicles, 2 Chronicles, you will see it written throughout Kings and Chronicles when they're talking about a certain king like Solomon or Josiah or Hezekiah or Uzziah. You might see it written, is this not written? Or you might see, and the rest of the Acts of Solomon are written in the book of the Acts of Solomon. And the rest of the Acts of Josiah are written in the book of the prophet Gad. Or the rest of the Acts of Solomon are written in the book of the prophet Gad and the prophet Nathan. Are not these written in the book of the prophet Nathan? Who you see was the active prophet that spoke to David and to Solomon. Gad also. So if you came to me and said, "This is the book of Nathan," I might look at it just to see that it says the same thing Yah's book already said. But you never see in the book of Yah, in the scriptures of truth, in Yahweh's word, in the book of remembrance, you'll never see in the book of the covenant. And all these are the same book. It's the word of Yah. You'll never see in the word of the Most High anybody ever saying to you, "Did not Enoch say thus?" But if you go to the first book of the seat, the very first book of the seat that we went over yesterday, the New Testament, in the book of Jude. Now, you got to go to a book of lies. And why is the New Testament a book of deceit? For those of you just tuning in, just watching, just listening, and we did start a little late today at 7:30, so we are still on, and it's around 8:40. So those of you just tuning in and seeing, what are we dealing with? We're dealing with the seven books of deceit. We just finished talking about the Talmud, and now we're dealing with the book of Enoch. But I'm going to show you in the first book of deceit why the book of Enoch is a book of deceit. Because the only place you'll hear about the book of Enoch in any scripture that is held up and revered is in the first book of deceit. And why is the New Testament the first book of deceit? The New Testament is the first book of deceit because it is the chief book of the chief religion of deceit in the world. There is no more popular religion than Christianity. And there is no more popular book of deceit than the New Testament. And the New Testament tells you that you can keep any day you want holy. And Yahweh said, keep the Sabbath day holy. The New Testament, as we saw yesterday, Christ in the New Testament tells you to drink his blood and eat his flesh. And then when you rise up, because you have to die, and then when you rise up in the last day, you'll be with him. I don't know about you, but that sounds like vampirism. And this is the book of the New Testament, which tells you it's the new covenant. And Yahweh already told you in the new covenant, in the time of the new covenant, that you shall not teach your neighbor anymore that know Yahweh, for everyone will know Yah. But Christians and those that follow after the New Testament are always trying to teach you about God. Well, this is the book of deceit, the New Testament. But in the book of Jude, which is in the book of the New Testament, is the only place that you'll find any validity of the book of Enoch from any scripture held up and revered more than the book of Enoch. And you'll see in the book of Jude, and it only has one chapter, in the 14th verse, it states here, "And Enoch, in the seventh generation from Adam," which is not true. Which is not true. As a matter of fact, Enoch is the sixth generation from Adam. So first off, the book of Jude in the New Testament is lying to you already. Enoch, in the seventh generation from Adam, prophesies about them. Who did he prophesize about? Well, let me show you. Well, I'm not going to read that because you'll see that when I read the book of Enoch. But it's saying that he prophesies about this. And he said that the book of Enoch says, "Look, the Lord comes with thousands of his holy ones to execute judgment on all, to convict them of all their wicked acts that have done in a wicked way and of all the harsh things wicked sinners have said against him." Now, this is something that they supposedly quoted from the book of Enoch. Why does the New Testament talk about a prophecy of Enoch, and Yahweh never spoke about a prophecy of Enoch? And did you know there are more than one book of Enoch? There's the Secrets of Enoch, the Book of the Enoch, the Prophet, the Book of Enoch. You got all kinds of, it's like four or five different books of Enoch. And in, I got two here with me today. I got one, the Book of Enoch, the Prophet. And then I got another, which is found in the lost books of the Bible and the forgotten books of Eden, which is a complete book of lies. In this book, in the book of Enoch, this is the Secrets of Enoch. In the 14th chapter, I'm going to show you what Enoch was supposed to have been, when it was able to see all the seven gates of heaven and the operations of the sun, moon, and stars, and how everything was to work. He was supposed to have been told the secrets of the winds, the secrets of the snow, the secrets of the rain, the chambers of the fire, the chambers of the clouds, the chamber of the sun, the chamber of the moon, the east gate, and the west gate, and the north gate, and the south gate. He was supposed to have been told all these different gates and how they all work. And let me show you what the Secrets of Enoch tell you, how Enoch saw things. And in the 14th chapter of the book of the Secrets of Enoch, it says, "And again, those men led me away to the western parts and showed me six great gates, open corresponding to the eastern gates, opposite to where the sun sets, according to the number of the days, 365 and a quarter." Now, why is that laughable? Because it's telling you that Enoch, way back when, before the flood, said that there are 365 and a quarter days in a year, which, according to science and history, Egyptians, Babylonians, and Europeans did not know there was 365 and a quarter of days until after the flood. Which they didn't know anyway, because there aren't 365 and a quarter days in a year. 365 and a quarter days is the calculation that the heathens figured out by following the sun according to what they call the equinoxes, which actually, if you look at it and do some research, it's only 364 days. But this book, or the Secrets of Enoch, tell you it was 365 days and a quarter, which is, of course, a lie. Because if he came before the flood and wrote this before the flood, well, in the book of Genesis, the 7th chapter, the 11th verse, lets you know that on the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, that the fountains of the great deep were broken up and the fountains of heaven were opened, and it rained on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. And then in the 8th chapter of Genesis, the 1st through the 3rd verse, it says, after the 150 days, on the 7th month and the 17th day of the month, the waters were abated. Now, if you have the 2nd month, the 17th, to the 7th month, the 17th, and they tell you, the scriptures tell you, Yah's scriptures tell you that it was 150 days, you know that every month was 30 days. And you find throughout the whole entire book, every month is 30 days. And you find in 1 Chronicles, the 27th chapter, the 1st through the 13th verses, that there's only 12 months in every year, as it records in the book of Kings, 1 Kings, the 4th chapter, the 7th verse. Solomon had 12 officers for every month of the year. 12 times 30, brothers and sisters, is 360. But Enoch tells you it's 365 days. That's what Enoch tells you. And he again keeps on reading and says, after the quarter days, thus again it goes, now listen, everybody's running around the world trying to prove that the earth is flat, which is absurd. And the only scripture they have to go to is Enoch, because they believe the book of Enoch is a book of truth. But this doctrine is a doctrine of deceit. As you see, it's verified by another doctrine of deceit. And in this doctrine of deceit, it says, thus again, it says, talking about the sun, goes down to the western gates and draws away its light, the greatness of its brightness under the earth. And the flat earth doctrine teaches that the sun goes under the earth. Under the earth, for since the crown of its shining is in heaven, which is letting you know under the earth is not heaven, with the master and guarded by 400 angels, while the sun goes around on a wheel under the earth, and stands 7 great hours in the night. You see, the book told you that the sun stands in 7 great hours in the night and spends half of its course under the earth. When it comes to the eastern approach in the 8th hour of the night, the sun is in the 8th hour of the night, it brings its lights to the crowning of the shining, and the sun flames forth more than fire. That's the secret to Enoch. And those secrets aren't a secret at all, and nor are they truth. It's the book of deceit. That's in the book of the secrets of Enoch. And you know the sun is never in the night. Wherever the sun is, it's day. Because the greater light rules the day, and the lesser light rules the night. And there is no sun spinning around on a wheel under the earth. But I'll move forward because we're running out of time. And now I'm reading out of the book of the Enoch, the prophet. Again, words they ascribe to Enoch to show you something. Because what you'll find is in the book of Enoch, in the book of Jubilee, in the book of the New Testament, in the book called the Gilgamesh, a Babylonian scripture, in the Quran, you'll find there's this war in heaven. Apparently, angels decided to go on a war against Yahweh himself. That's like my little son trying to go to war with me in my house. And I could pick all my sons up with one hand and toss them. And so if I could do that with my children, what you think Yahweh could do with his? But there was a war in heaven. They fought against Yahweh. And in the book of Enoch, In the 12th chapter of the book of the prophet Enoch, it says, before these things, Enoch was hidden. And let me get right to it. It says here, verse 4, Enoch, thou scribe of righteousness, go, declare. And he's supposed to be sending Enoch to angels. And Yahweh never sent a man to prophesy to angels. I could show you in the book of Judges, the second chapter, where Yahweh sent an angel to speak his words to the children of Israel. But you never see Yahweh using a man to go correct the angels. As a matter of fact, in Psalms, it says Yahweh has made us a little bit lower than the angels. And why would Yahweh do something this out of order? In Enoch, go declare to the watchers of heaven who have left the high heaven, the holy eternal place, and have defiled themselves with women and have done as the children of earth do. Now, all of a sudden, the book of Enoch is telling you that angels have slept with human being women. That's why they tried to tell you that's what it's saying in the book of Genesis, the sixth chapter, where it says it came to pass that the sons of Elohim saw the daughters of men that they were fair, and they took them wives of all that they chose. They're saying that this is from the book of Enoch because angels slept with humans. Well, the truth of the matter is the sons of Elohim were the sons of Adam. Adam, Seth, Enos, Canaan, Mahaliel, Yared, Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, Noah, the children of these great men, which were Yahweh's sons, slept with the daughters of men, which were the daughters of Cain. And the book of Enoch supports this fallacy. But you know what else supports that fallacy? An old ancient book of deceit called the Gilgamesh. You know what else supports that fallacy? The New Testament. And you know what else supports that fallacy? The Quran. And here in the book of Enoch, it says, they have slept with the children of men as the children of earth do, and have taken unto themselves wives. Ye have wrought great destruction on earth, and ye shall have no peace for forgiveness of sin, insomuch as they delight themselves in their children. The murder of their beloved ones shall they see, and over the destruction of their children shall they lament, and shall make supplication unto eternity, but mercy and peace shall ye not attain. And Enoch went and said, Azazel, thou shalt have no peace, and serve a sentence, and a severe sentence has gone forth against thee to put thee in bonds. And this, what they call the devil or Satan, that's who they call it, Azazel, which Azazel happens to be the Hebrew word for scapegoat. You see, they don't know how to speak properly. And the scapegoat is what we've set out on the Day of Atonement. But here Azazel's supposed to be this angel that was called also Lucifer. And it says, you're going to be setting bounds in the earth. And that's what it says in the book of Revelations. The devil who was thrown and cast down to the ends under the earth and set in bands because of your unrighteousness, because all the works that you have taught of godlessness and unrighteousness and sin that thou hast shown men, because it can't be man. It can't be man's fault that we sin. It has to be some mystical satanic being. And let me show you one last scripture. Because, of course, that book is deceit. Of course, what I just read is deceit. It's all based in Christianity. And I failed to mention, but I'll say it to you now, the book of Enoch was written by Christians. It was written by Ethiopian Christians, or people that paraded themselves as Ethiopian Christians. The book didn't pop up until the era of Christianity. It has no validity in the word of Yah. That's why it supports the Christian doctrine so much. Because it was written by Christians. That's why you see it in the New Testament. And lastly, just to show you what Yahweh said in the book of Isaiah, the 40, Let me get it real quickly. Isaiah chapter 42. And I'm going to start reading at verse 6. It says, I have called thee in righteousness, and I will hold thy hand and will keep thee and give thee for a covenant of the people, for a light of the Gentiles, to open the blind eyes. Talking about you, Israel, his servant. This is what he has his servant doing. Because our eyes have been blinded, to open up the blind eyes, to bring out the prisoners from the prison, and them that sit in darkness out of the prison house. Yahweh says this in verse 8. I am Yahweh. That is my name. And my glory will I not give to another, neither my praise to graven images. In all of these books, I'll give him praise and giving glory to other people, great false deities, and lying, deceitful men. Yahweh said, seek ye out of the book of Yah and read, not one of these shall fail, not one of them shall lack her mate. For my mouth has called them, and my spirit has gathered them. Hallelujah. And until tomorrow, Yahweh loves you very much, and so do we at the house of Israel. Shalom.